There's an old saying that in any democracy, the most important election is the second one. And in an effort to improve wargaming throughout the democratic nations, there really would not have been this whole international series of war games you've seen if it wasn't for four individuals. Of course, we know Graham, Professor Sabin, I'd like to pretend I'm never nervous in front of people, but it's just an act. Colin Maston and also Major Tom Murat, you've all met all four of them. They're all essential. It wouldn't have happened without all of them. But I wanted to say a special thank you to the good professor, because in addition to helping put together the conference, year after year as the conference got started, he would invite all the international participants, or at least those from across the pond, over to his home and share his hospitality and his heart. He also kind of has a fondness for books. So I thought it would be good to get him a book from where I'm living right now, the Air Force Museum, the Museum of the United States Air Force, and just one more book. You have so few. So
thank you.
I just want to say thank you for that. And then I've talked to all four of them, and they all say, oh, absolutely all of us are essential. But then three of the four say, but Graham is probably the most essential of the essential. So I want to be fast, but and I'm also not all that well off, so I don't have, didn't buy books for everybody, but I got an Air Force Museum pin for all four of you. So again, all of you, thank you so much. There would not be a Connections Canada, there would not be a Connections Australia, there certainly would not be a Connections UK without you. So thank you all very, very much. Okay, so getting back to what we're covering this thing, and Graham asked me to talk a little bit about wargaming initiation, wargame kickoff, wargame definition before we get started. I was very privileged to work for a guy by the name of Colonel John Warden. I was a student at Air Command Staff College when he was Commandant, and then I was on faculty after graduation. And he liked to say, it doesn't really matter how fast you climb a ladder if it's leaning against the wrong building. And one of the things that we've discovered is that over and over again, when we look at war games that went wrong, they tend to go wrong because the designers and the producers did a great job of creating a war game for something other than what the customer really wanted. So in my course on wargaming that's offered in the fall and the spring out at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, one of the things we teach is that wargame definition. Wargame definitions have a few elements to it. The first and foremost is, what is the basic objective of the customer, the objective? I have a very good friend who, great American and patriotic and handsome and underpaid, but he had this war game with 29 objectives. And it was like trying to run through a checklist. And some achieving some objectives meant you weren't going to achieve other ones. So so what we say is, you need to have a single goal. And then any of those sub-objectives, if achieving a sub-objective keeps you from getting your goal, you don't do the sub-objective. So that's one element of a war game definition. The second major element of the war game definition is, now that you know what the customer wants, what's the customer willing to do for it? And the three main elements we have there is time. How much time do you have before the customer wants the game report? How much manpower is he willing to either allocate or pay for or and somehow secure? And then what other resources? And resources could be money, it could be facilities, it could be audiovisual support. And then there's a final element to the definition of the war game before it goes final, and we like to have an actual face-to-face written agreement with the sponsor, and that's what I've been calling literature search. And I've been told by some people that that's too grandiose a term, that literature search is like some sort of computer program or something else like that. But we're very blessed in the United States, and there's some discussions about doing something like this in the United Kingdom, where because of Deputy Secretary of Defense work, we have a war game repository where all the war games that are done on an analytical nature are supposed to put into this secret level SIPR level repository. And this was done so you could get reports. Well, it serves a lot of purposes. One is to try to make sure you're not scheduling your war game at the same time as somebody else's war game. But the other value that this has is that you can go back and look who else has done a war game on this subject. How long did it take them? How much manpower did it take them? What were they saying as far as what went wrong and what went right? Hopefully, what in their write-up do they say, boy, if we had to do it over again, we would do this different. And so part of that literature search, and that's still very much a work in progress, because we're not sure we're capturing everything in the U.S., and we're not capturing it the best way possible. We're certainly not capturing lessons from throughout NATO and the other friendly nations as far as, you know, how they can do things better. And one of the things that I've found is that every nation does something better than everybody else. And that kind of leads us into the three talks. One of the big things that I've learned about war game and war game design is that one size does not fit all. It's not, let's look at these different options and figure out what's best. What we really need to do is look at different options and look at what's the best fit. So today we have three speakers, each important folks that are going to be talking about some aspect of war game design. And please, please, please don't think about which one of them is, you know, one's right and the other two's wrong. Each will be covering an important part. Now, you know all about Professor Sabin already and his role in Connections UK and all that followed after it. He's also a very valuable person in another way. When people write the history of science, they not only look at inventions that have a big impact, but breakthroughs and inventions that lead to other breakthroughs and lead to other inventions. And a lot of people in this room have made contributions to the field of wargaming. Professor Sabin over the years has created a whole lot of people that are making contributions to the field of wargame. So he is one of these rare people in the history of science and the advancement of mankind that not only made great achievements himself, but created others to make great achievements. So it's an honor and a privilege to ask him to be our first speaker. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks.